This is Robert Cappuccio. Welcome to the Self-Help Antidote, a weekly dose of reason, perspective, and insight, where we challenge conventional thinking and explore authentic strategies and insights around personal transformation. Our commitment to you is to bring you some of the world's leading experts in the domains of fitness, wellness, coaching, and behavior change, separating fact from fallacy. Hey, Kel.
Hey, Bobby.
You are looking crisp and clear today. I'm looking very fuzzy.
Maybe that's intentional.
I don't know. I mean, I do have a face for audio, but thank heavens this is audio, because aside from how I normally look, you add fuzzy on top of that. It's just, it's horrifying, like this early in the new year.
So, I curled my hair for nothing.
I know. Like, so those of you who cannot see this, which is pretty much everyone except us, Kelly has like this massive, massive, like 1970s hair. No, I'm just kidding. She doesn't. Her hair's straight. It's wavy. It looks great. I've got a hat on and an Argyle jumper. So yeah, now you know, like everything related to fashion about me and Kel. So, you know, it's early enough in the new year that people are thinking about restarts. And when we were speaking prior to hitting the record button, you were talking about getting back up. You know, well, if we're going to talk about getting back up, what do you mean by that? And what typically keeps people down?
Great question. You know, I really don't think we're trained very well in resilience. I just think we're not.
And not in today's society.
No, it scares me. I mean, my kids are college age, and you know, I kind of see what's going on with that generation. And wow, I mean, compared to our generation and the generations ahead of us, you had to be resilient. You didn't have a choice. And now it just seems like everyone just wants to be comfortable. They want everything to work out well all the time. And we will get knocked down 10 times, sometimes all at the same time. You have to be able to get up that 11th time. The very lowest level of energy is to be a victim. That's where you feel like the world is happening to me. There's absolutely nothing I could do about it. It is a horrible place to live, but so many people live there. And the highest place to live is that love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control. That's where we want to live. And the tipping point to go from that victim place to that place of love is courage. You have to have the courage to get back up again. And one of the things that I do with people is to find a way that they can find what's good about your situation. So even if you're, you know, right now we're in the midst of COVID again and again and again, we're just lingering on and on, terrible, horrible. We're not minimizing that. But in your situation, people lost jobs, terrible things happen, but good things happen too. If you can shift your mind to go, okay, what's good about this? So for example, I went through a divorce. I've been working with a lot of women who go through divorce. Divorce is called a major life event for a reason. You feel like this tornado came in, it scattered your life everywhere. It left this gaping hole of pain in your heart. And so many things are changing. Your house probably changes, your friend groups change, your kids' schools may change, and so many things professionally can change. So it's a lot, but at some point you got to get back up again from being that victim.
You know, I have a sneaking suspicion, because if you look at what's true, and I hear this a lot and I'm observing this a lot, that people today lack resilience. We're going through something right now, and it's a unique situation because we're going through something globally. Yet if you look back in history, you know, like World War I, World War II, there are a lot of nations that went through stuff that's arguably just as bad, maybe even much worse. And they reacted to it a little bit differently. Yet you see some people in our society, like Generation Z or Z, millennials, that are quite resilient. They're more resourceful than we were when we were growing up. Like when we were growing up, like the advice was, listen, if it isn't broken, you know, don't fix it. Don't make any waves. Keep your nose clean. Keep your head down. Go to school. Get good grades. So this way you can get a really good job and you can pass papers from one end of the desk to the other for like 40 years. Go to a few meetings and, you know, we'll give you a pension and a Timex watch. And for the most part, you know, a whole generation with a few exceptional people like, yeah, sure. Okay. And you don't see that as much. So you see gross contradictions and examples of remarkable people. And I don't think innately we're smarter, stronger, better than anyone today, but there just seemed to be an underlining societal grit that is missing. And I don't want to say from particular individuals, but from a collective as society. You were talking about divorce, and we're, you're one person one day. And I think I hear you saying you wake up another person the next day. And when I was talking with Susan Sly, you know, mutual friend, what came up in brutal life circumstances, and when they change, it's not the devastation. It's not the pain. It's the ambiguity and uncertainty related to identity. Do you see a correlation? I know this is a big question, Kelly, but God, you're one of those like smartest people I know, so I'll throw this out. Do you see a correlation between a lack of a societal identity? We're basically having conventional wisdom and our value structure turned upside down and shaken. Could there be a correlation between disruption, fragmentization of societal identity, and loss of resilience?
Absolutely, 100%. For me, using my example, my identity was in being a wife, being a mom, the neighborhood I lived in, you know, all those things, and they all went away in a moment. Mm. And it left me like on my knees, emptied out, just questioning everything about my life. Like, what was my identity really wrapped up in? Because none of it was true, and it all went away in a moment. And when I say my kids, you know, they were going off to college, so your role changes as a mom. And I needed to ask myself, like, who am I really? Because all these things are temporary. Mm. And they could be gone in a minute. So the things that I thought I was standing on that were my rock and my foundation all of a sudden were gone. And I was left, you know, looking in the mirror at me, really asking, who am I?
That I want to talk about that, because one thing that I heard that captured my attention was none of it was true. It's like, oh, okay. And then if I am not the roles that I play in my life, who am I really?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, so me, my background is physical, physiology, fitness training for 35 plus years. And when you start to work with people physically, you realize that it affects their mindset, as you know, and you're such a master. And so you study the mind. And when you get to the end of the mind, you're left with the quantum field. And at the end of the quantum field is when you get into the spiritual field. So I did a deep spiritual dive, and that's really where I found my peace, my identity, my healing, my wholeness, my completeness. And that was the one thing that I know is not changeable and the thing that I can rely on. So I wound up putting my identity in my faith, and that got me to a place of, from the inside out, experiencing the joy, the love, and the peace, and getting rid of the bitterness, the anger, the sadness, and the depression that came with the identity that I had that went away.
So for you, a source of not only resilience, because it's one thing to persevere through. We talked about resilience on this show multiple times, and my definition for resilience is one that comes from physics, like structural resilience. Like if you're taking a look at things like hysteresis within the property of a material, how much strain and stress can you take and still return back to optimal functionality? That is kind of my frame for what resilience is. It's not just being tough and how much can you take. What's your return to functionality? Oh, I'm here. There's so many things that I want to unpack for you. I am not my role. I am what I choose to believe. And it's not just things that I choose to believe that alleviate struggle. It's that set a path forward.
Yes. And to become not only the same when you get back up again, but to be better. You know, mm-hmm. So don't just get back up, but get up and be better. Like you're stronger, you're more resilient. So you have built courage and strength. mean, one of my recent bestsellers is called Success Habits of Super Achievers, and it tells the story of over 80 ordinary people who had some unreasonable difficulty happen to them that they chose to get back up again and not only be the same, but to do something extraordinary with it. So from the pain came the purpose. So, for example, I had a friend whose son tragically fell out of a window and
Oh
was
my
killed when
God.
he was 7 years old. It was terrible. And she wound up creating this, window guard company, and she got on Oprah and she was in People magazine. And so you take the pain, the thing that, how do you overcome that kind of a sadness and grief? And she did something with it. And there's so many stories. I mean, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, that started with two moms whose kids were killed. And so if you can find purpose in the pain and get back up again and really discover something even greater than who you were, and you can take all the ugly, dark, hard time. I mean, I'm not minimizing any of the terrible abuse and things that happened. It's horrible, horrible. I hate it all. I hate all of it. But we have a choice. We can find something good in it and turn it into something better.
We just talk about purpose because we talk about purpose a lot, and usually it's like, well, what's my purpose? And I need this big grandiose mission, which sometimes resonates with some people, for others not so much. And I don't think it's necessarily true, but as you've probably guessed at this point in the conversation, I'm obsessed with semantics. Like, what do we mean by that? When we say purpose, is it this innate thing that we're born with that we have to go out and discover and fulfill? Again, for me, I think it's like when you understand what's meaningful to you, and a lot of times that is a choice. Other times, that's a different conversation. You misinterpret that by what other people think should be meaningful to you, another podcast maybe, and you live that meaning. You breathe into it. You step into that. At some point, it's going to contribute to someone or something around you. And what's meaningful, yeah, that's purpose for me.
I do believe everyone is born with a purpose on their life. Whether we realize that and really dig in and find that out is up to us. We can miss it. We can totally miss it. We miss it all the time. I'm sure that I do. But I feel like everyone is very individual and no two people are meant to have the same journey at all. But it's a matter of, like Edison felt that need to discover the light bulb. And how many times did he fail and fail and fail until he finally did it? We have the opportunity every day to get up and do something. Use the word meaningful. I've had a word of the year for the last 14 years. My word for last year was meaningful. And what I always take time and intention to figure the word out, and really the word finds me. But what meaningful meant to me was that I get to decide the meaning that I give to everything in my life. And I only want to do meaningful things with meaningful people. So as the year goes on, the word really reveals itself to me. And I can say, looking back, that I cut out a lot of stuff that was not meaningful to me. And I also reserved my time and my thinking and everything I did to do things that were really deep and meaningful. I love deep, meaningful conversations. That's why we always got along so good. I don't want to waste any time on this, nonsense surface stuff. Like, I want to go deep and really leave a conversation feeling better. I want to leave a room feeling like I left some love and joy and encouragement in the room. So I want to live a meaningful life every day, and that's part of my purpose. And purpose may evolve. I mean, everything that I do will always somehow be lined up with health, but the vehicle may change in how I do it.
I'm comfortable living in a world where two things can be true, and sometimes two opposite things based on the context. There might be somebody listening to this right now that says, hold on, wait. I just heard Kelly say that there's almost this innate spiritual sense of meaning, a purpose that we have, and life is a discovery. You need to find that and fulfill that, and you can miss it. Then you said, we need to decide what's meaningful. Unpack that, right? Reconcile that for us a little bit. Like, how does that work
Yeah,
together?
so I believe that we do have a purpose and a meaning on our life, and we can totally miss it. I mean, people will, cut their lives short. We have free will every day that we can choose to do things that are destructive or constructive. But we get to choose the meaning we give to something. So, for example, I use divorce. Like, I can go, oh my goodness, if you heard my story, you would cry for me. It was horrible. And I can stay in that victim, where I can go, wait a minute. There are so many amazing things about being single. You know, I was married for 25 years. We're together 26. I'm like, wow, this is a chance for me to be the best version of myself. I get to decide everything, when I eat, the temperature in the house, you know, where, when I fall asleep. I mean, wow, there's some cool things to being single. So I can take something that happened, whether it's a car accident or whatever, you lose a parent, lose a child, horrible things happen. But how can I look at this and go, okay, what's good about this? What is forcing me to find something good and meaningful about this? Or I can stay stuck in this place of anger or depression or, I mean, wow, there's so many ugly negative places I can stay. Denial, defensiveness. I can stay in there or I can try and find something good in this.
You know, you talk about free will. And there's a lot of debate. Like there are quite a few neuroscientists who are quite clever and saying, it is an absolute illusion. And there's a lot of empirical evidence to show we don't have nearly as much free will as we think we do. But Nobel laureates like Kandel said, well, no, self-determinism is a real thing. It's just, are you taking the high road cognitively in the brain or the low road? What's more useful? Because I think where the commonality is, like there's a lot of arguments around nutrition. You know, you can have two people studying nutrition for their entire lives, no ulterior motives. They're just going where the data leads them and they arrive at very different conclusions. And then people get into groups like, you know, like plant-based versus, you know, keto now, and they fight amongst each other. For me, I'm like, what's the commonality? Like, where do most people land? And even in the camp that says, well, free will is mostly an illusion, but there's adaptability because even if your actions are preconditioned by everything that's happened to you, you know, within your life and even before that, probably that's a different story. There's things that are going to happen to you and there's how you adapt, and that adaptability makes all the difference in terms of where you land, because nobody's arguing about the adaptive nature of human beings. It's one of the things that makes us the dominant species. So for me, the question is what's useful? And when things are really tough and quite uncertain, like you're looking 1 month, 3 months, and because all of the markers that you use to make predictions are now gone, what's some of the internal frames of mind that have helped you and have helped, it could maybe help other people navigate through when I don't really know what's true right now.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So with free will and using nutrition as the example, I mean, no one's putting food in my mouth. So that's the one thing of maybe we can't control a lot of things, but no one is pouring like cake and beer into my mouth. I have free will about what goes into my mouth. And having studied nutrition for 30 plus years, how I ate in college, you know, back in the late 80s when it was about the fat-free diet, and how I eat today as a, you know, 52-year-old woman who feels like she's 27 are very, very, it has evolved and I'm sure it will continue to evolve. And the point is I feel healthy. I feel vibrant. I get up, I'm tweaking things. I'm finding what works for me. So I have total free will when it comes to my body and what I consume. And now I'm trying to remember what your question was.
When you don't really know what's true, because sometimes we don't, like this could be true. This could be true. I mean, we navigate through the world through our cognitive biases. Right. When all of the markers that we use to make predictions are now gone because we have a life-changing event like a divorce, what are some of the frames or the questions or what are some tools we can pull from where we can go, okay, I don't know exactly what the future holds, but I know I'm going to be okay because.
Right. Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's definitely our version of truth. It starts with our beliefs, and our beliefs determine, you know, that's the words that we speak. The words get put into action, and then that action becomes a habit, which is 95% of what we do after the age of 35 is habit. And then the habit becomes character, and the character becomes the identity. And if you look at even culturally, I mean, we grew up in New York, and I, you know, Italian, New York, Catholic, that's your culture. It's what you believe. It's what you do. And, you know, then you move down to the buckle, the Bible Belt in Texas, and, you know, Italians are not in the minority. We're in the minority here. And, you know, so culture just predict so much. I mean, if we grew up in Poland or Iraq, we would have very, very different, or, you know, anywhere, Asia. So much of it does come from the world, the influence about what we believe to be true. And then our experiences definitely, you know, add to that. And we get to weigh things out and we get to decide what we believe is true. And our truths may be very different. For me, the thing that I hold up as being truth is in my faith. I have seen too many miracles in my life not to believe that there is a spiritual realm, that we are these physical bodies living in a spiritual world, that miracles do happen. So I do rely on, for example, the Bible, the oldest book, what is in there to be true. That has held up. Is it clear cut, black and white? Not at all. But that's what faith is. It's the evidence of things you haven't seen.
So for you, it's not even actualization. Like I know I'm going to focus on something where, you know, I can be and I must be what I'm capable of being. For you, it's something beyond that. It's transcendence. It's dedicating yourself to something that has a meaning bigger than you are. And that's been a source of strength, and that's contributed to resilience. You know, the two questions I have first is, what do you define as a miracle? When you say miracle, that's such a powerful word. What is a miracle for you?
There's really no other explanation for it. It didn't make sense. It wasn't feasible. There's no science that could really explain it. It's something where something shows up in such a big way that it doesn't even make sense. There's no other explanation. I call it a godsidence, where you might say, well, that was a coincidence, or that was God, but it's like everything just came together and something happened that was beyond anything you could ask, think, or imagine, but it gave you confirmation and it lined up based on something that you were hoping for.
Also, for you, like, miracles start with seeming impossibilities.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a gift that you weren't even expecting, that when you got it, you're like, oh, okay, this doesn't even make sense. I mean, I'm happy to share tons of miracle stories with you. I've had so many.
I would like you to, would you feel comfortable talking about, cause I know we've discussed it, but would you feel comfortable talking about what happened in your life-changing event?
Yeah. So, you know, 24 years into my marriage, living the dream, what I thought, I'm in a beautiful mansion, gated community, golf course, you know, the whole bit, just really a great life, two kids, everyone's healthy. And my husband came home and said, my commitment to our marriage is zero. And he left. And it did floor me. And my kids were junior and senior in high school, literally like 2 days before the school was about to start. And so I went on this journey, this really a 3-year, what I lovingly refer to as a healing sabbatical, trying to figure it out. Like, I am a knowledge person. So I was like, wait a minute, what just happened here? I needed to figure it out. And I wanted to know my part in it, because I never wanted to do it again, because it's never 100% the other person and 0% you. It just isn't. If you're in a relationship, it's not. So I needed to do a deep dive and really own, a couple things. I was an enabler, didn't know that. I was a perfectionist, didn't know that. I was a control freak, didn't know that. And if you heard my story again, you would cry for me. It was terrible, it was horrible, unfair, unjust, whatever. But I just wanted to own my part. And so that was the journey that I went on. And I actually hired over 21 different experts in the field of healing and trauma and recovery. And I went to the healing place. I went on the retreats. I took the seminars. I was in divorce recovery. I did all the things. And I really figured out 8 different things that I could help anyone heal from any trauma or grief a lot faster. But it was a 3.5-year journey creating the program I wish I had.
Well, that's a program I think we all want to know more about. I'm going to take you back a little bit, because what really stood out for me is that you were taken by surprise. It was the words when you said, what just happened? You were living in one reality and your husband in the same house was living in a completely different reality.
Yes.
And then came home and said that. And I think we can feel that land. Like, just sit with someone you love and you've been with for ages saying that to you. Wow. But then what I'm also hearing is your way out of that was leaning on strengths that have served you previously. And you might have been blindsided, but there's one love of learning. Who you are was built on your value. And you could say it's a strength, love of learning. And then there's also this openness, this sense of responsibility. What was my part? And that's hard when you've been wounded. Because normally, like the impulse, and it's understandable, is to lash back. And there are moments of that. Like, how could you? But it's like, okay, what was my role in this? So there's this incredible amount of responsibility and openness and humility and all of these strengths that I've admired in you, like throughout most of our relationship. Like, I didn't know this when you first hired me, by the way, thank you for the gig, going back almost 30 years ago, but it became quite conspicuous. What do people not know about themselves that heartbreak sometimes reveals? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I've always done these tests like the strengths finders and the mind scans and the Enneagrams, and they definitely reveal things to you about yourself. So, I mean, you hit it. I'm a knowledge person. I'm highly responsible. I mean, you know what a lot of my core strengths are. And I think those things are good to know. But what I found is I didn't like the way I was wired. Like, I was always a high D. I was always driving. And I look at that now, I'm like, I don't want to be that person. So I believe you can change some of those things. So I believe you're wired a certain way, but you also have the ability to change, because I don't want to be that high D person anymore. I don't want to be the one who's out there with my sword fighting. I'm like, no, that's not how I want to be. I want to be more in the middle. So I want to be a little bit of the social person. I want to be a little bit of the person who can analyze and have strategy. And so I feel like if I took those assessments today, I'd be more in the middle. But there's still a way that we're designed, that there's things that are in us that it's just how we're wired. So my bend is to learn when something hurts or is painful, I want to understand it. And that's why we're teachers and coaches, because we take that and we want to share it with other people. So I don't know if that answered your question.
No, you know what? I was just thinking, wait a minute, is that answering my question? And then you said something where I was like, okay, I think that leads into something that answers the question in a far more constructive way. And what I heard in that was, I didn't want to be this person anymore.
Yeah.
And my question that came up was, did you ever really want to be that person? Or was that the person you became by default? And did it take something so painful and disruptive to show you, wait, hold on, maybe that's not who I want to be?
Yeah. So I was wired to be this driver and I did not want to be that way anymore. I didn't realize that I was that way. But what happens is we both got in a different ditch. So talking about a relationship, I was married to someone who was highly irresponsible and foolish. So I became the one who was going to be hyper responsible and so wise. And I was going to learn and find everything out. And that turned into really controlling everything. So you want to be somewhere in the middle. You don't want to be in either one of the ditches on anything, but we're just wired or bent to be a certain way. So I'm probably always going to be responsible, but looking now, like, I'm not dating yet. It's been about 3.5 years, but I know at some point I'm going to open my heart to that. I don't want to be the person that I was in my marriage. I don't want to be the leader. I don't want to be the one out there with my sword and, you know, fighting and striving and driving. Like, I'm ready to be the princess. I'm ready to be the support role. I don't want to be the one who's out there trying to control anything. I am strong at some things and that's going to rise up because I have strengths that maybe the other person does. But in a relationship, the whole idea is that you're pulling out their strengths, they're pulling out your strengths, but you're also pulling out their weaknesses and they're pulling out your weaknesses. So you're coming together. When you're the most intimate with someone, you get the opportunity to see in them the weaknesses or maybe the ugly things or the false beliefs or where they're malfunctioning, and in a kind, gentle way to call that out in them to make them better. So that's the idea of two people being together.
Partnership.
Yes.
You're better. So another conversation I was having with a friend that I really want to introduce you to, Tiffany Cook. She's one of my best friends in the world. She's brilliant. And the two of you would get on like a house on fire, but that's besides the point. And we were talking about, how do you know when you're in a healthy relationship versus when you're in not necessarily an abusive relationship, but one that's toxic. And I think one of the things that we landed on is when you're the best version of yourself and the most free and the least constrained and the least second guessing and cautious, hesitant with someone, that's a very healthy relationship, not just romantically, but in any interpersonal dynamic. I think the answer that we landed on is sometimes it takes pain and something tragic to shake us up and say, okay, am I the person who I am because I adapted a strong suit in order to survive or thrive in a certain challenging circumstance? Or am I this person by design? And do I really want to be this person? And if I don't, I can reinvent myself. For me, it was 9/11. By the time I was like 18, I didn't think I had very many prospects at all for a lot of reasons. And once someone believed in me and I started getting a little bit of success, I adapted this personality of being a super driver, super learner, business 24/7. And then 9/11 happened and I got very sick because I lived at ground zero. Now you cannot work 15 hours a day, you know, and study for another few. Now you cannot shut everything that's not business and achievement out of your life, not because you're so motivated, but because you're almost kind of using it as a drug to not face who you are. You don't want to spend any time alone with yourself. I'm going to read like a book every other day. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to immerse myself in research and work and stay on the road so I never have to be alone with yourself. Now you're so sick, you can't do that. Is this who you really want to be? It's like, oh, I'm not a business person. Business doesn't even interest me. I'm an artist. You know, business is a necessity. It's a means to an end. And it's like, wow, this is not who I want to be. So sometimes those events, as painful as they are, and you said earlier, I acknowledge that and it sucks, but they might be more transformative than anything else we would learn outside of an experience like that.
Absolutely. I mean, people who I believe have what we call the most successful in the world, they have overcome the most difficult, extraordinary circumstances, and they took it and they did something with it. I totally hear what you're saying. When I was going through the depths of the ugliness of divorce, my brain did not work. I mean, I know I was driving everyone crazy, even myself. I'm like, I know they're talking, their mouth is moving. I have no idea what they're saying. I was repeating myself. I couldn't remember things. And I won't say a photographic memory, but I used to have a really good memory and I couldn't remember anything from the trauma. And it shows you how much you can't separate the spirit, the mind, and the body. They're all connected. Something emotional happened. Yeah, something emotional happened and my brain wasn't working. And thankfully I was healthy before. Some of these women that I coach with divorce who weren't healthy before, and now all of a sudden they've got stomach issues and inflammatory issues and migraines. And you know, you're taking the physical and now, you know, the emotional is manifesting itself because you're not dealing with it. And they're pressing all these things down and it's a lot at once. And a lot of times they don't know how to even process it. So it's going to show up somehow physically. So I know I keep going on tangents. You ask such great questions, but yeah, I agree. From the pain absolutely comes purpose. We're going to find something to do and it may put us off on a different course. And that's okay too. Like you said, the business now becomes a more artsy. And, you know, this life with all these different spokes on the wheel of physical, financial, emotional, relational, professional, it's never balanced and it's not meant to be. Sometimes we're supposed to go deep in one area so that we get strengthened in that. So maybe it's a financial crisis and we've really got to dig into that. Or maybe it's relational or physical. You know, we know at some point in our lives, we're probably going to walk out our parents dying. You know, we know that's coming in our adult life and that's a hard season, but it's also beautiful to walk someone out that last season of their life. Like you're going to learn from that. You're going to grow from that. So we're supposed to be thrown into these difficult things so that we get better or not. Like, that's where we have the choice. We can grieve for 8 years over the death of a parent who was, you know, 80, 90 years old and had a good long life because of unhealthy, false beliefs and attachments that we have. So the idea is to take everything and look at it from a healthy perspective that allows you to grow and be better from it.
So I used to go to this church a long, long time ago, and the matriarch of the church died from COVID a month ago. She had cancer, and just COVID pushed her over the edge. And I remember her mother's funeral, Lola, and Lola was in her 90s. And when she would see you, she would literally jump up and down, you know, like leave the ground, not by much, but she would leave the ground and she would grab you and, you know, she would hug you. And, you know, we just lost Betty White. Wow, what a tragedy that is. And I remember when people went to, at the end, it was pretty emotional. It was pretty painful. But up until that point, people were laughing constantly about her and people having a really good time. You said, like, helping someone transition or watching that. When we think about death, a lot of people, oh, this is the worst thing that can happen. It has happened to everyone. It's going to happen to everyone for the foreseeable future. Who knows? I don't know what's going to happen in 100, 200 years from now, where technology will be. But it's a beautiful transition. And that's, if something's tragic and you acknowledge that, you also have to acknowledge where it's beautiful. And they were able to celebrate her life. Most of that funeral, because this individual was well into her 90s, it was a celebration of the life that she had, who she was, and deeper than that, who she was for everybody in that room. She was successful. Like, you talked about success. Some of the most successful people, everybody has this image in their mind when they think about a successful person. What's success for you?
Yeah, success is really, you know, being a difference maker, so that when you leave the earth, you know, whether it's at your funeral or wherever, that you left a mark, you made a difference on people's lives. You got up every day and went, okay, here I am. How can I let love win today? To me, that is success. And love, for me, my definition is contending for the highest possible good in every situation until it's a present tense reality. So I look at a situation and go, okay, what is the best good that can happen from this? And I'm going to contend for it, whether it means me investing in it, praying about it, giving encouraging word, whatever that looks like. It could totally be hands off, but I'm just going to believe for the best to happen in this situation. I don't always know what the best is, but I think I have enough wisdom to at least be able to push things further along in the right direction. So like you said, when at the funeral, when I walk in a room, I want someone to leave better. I want someone to lean in and go, wow, there's something that she has and I want more of that. And it's not for my ego, but if it's because of the light that I carry, because of the hope and the peace and the joy that I carry. To me, it's not the money in the bank. I love that. And there's nothing wrong with it. And I want more of it. And I've, you know, got a nice house and a car and vacations. That's all wonderful, but I have had a lot of wealthy, wealthy, wealthy clients through the years that tell you, you know what? The money's not all it's cracked up to be. I've lived in the multi-million dollar neighborhoods and seen, you know, the tragedy and the trauma that can happen. So it is not at all just money. It's about carrying this love and peace and making a difference.
That gets me extremely excited because there's so much to unpack. There's not just so much to unpack. There's stuff that you can use right there today. That's one of those now factors. And some people listening to this, if they're struggling financially, might be like, well, that's easy for you to say. It's easy to say, you know, like when you have money, well, money's not all it's cracked up to be. Other people are going, yeah, I know what you mean. One of my mentors was highly successful financially. Well, let's just say this individual had a lot of money, but he would constantly talk about deprivation of relationships. He had no meaningful relationships. I'm going, this guy's not successful at all. And I got away from him as soon as I possibly could. And when we think about success as a society, not we, me, and you, or anybody listening to this, we think about stuff and I'll be successful when. What I love about what you're saying is that success is when you lovingly contribute to something, someone outside of yourself. And it's the way you frame situations in exploration of the highest good in something that's tragic. And that means, no, you don't have to be Elon Musk to be successful. You don't have to wait until next year when you hit your financial goals. You can be successful every single day. But how can I contribute? I'm going to be aware of opportunities today. How can I contribute in a state of love? Because we've been in business. Everybody's run into these people. They get around quite a bit where it's like, I want as much for me as possible. And they are ruthlessly greedy and selfish. Very rarely are those happy people. Can you really say that they're successful where you can be a success today, regardless of what happened yesterday or last year? If I'm looking for, if that's my definition and that lands with you, and it doesn't have to, you might say, well, that doesn't work for me. That's great. But if what you just said lands for somebody, it's like, okay, when I get off this podcast, what's an opportunity I have to contribute in love? And at the end of the day, how do I look at the things that happen, both good and both stressful? Go, okay, what's the highest good here? And you can be the person you want to be. Not perfectly. You're going to get it wrong constantly, but you can be that person in essence right now.
The number one need that every single person on the planet that has breath has is to be unconditionally loved. Mm-hmm. We want to be loved for who we are. We don't want anyone to change us, to try and tell us we're broken. Or so I think about like my kids, the favorite house that they love to go to growing up, because that mom, she just hugged you when you walked in. She made you feel like you were the most important person on the planet, that you were the only one that existed, that she was just so present with you and honoring to you. And it didn't matter. Nothing mattered. Your schoolwork, your how you did athletically. I mean, they would love to go to this one mom's house. And I noticed that. I'm like, she just loves unconditionally. And yeah, she doesn't need to parent those kids. She's, you know, sending them home, but you just sense that. And so I decided that that's what I want to do. I want to love people where they're at unconditionally, you know, not looking at their flaws or anything else, but just for them to feel that they are loved. And the number one need that a man feels besides unconditional love is to be respected. And the number one need that a woman has after unconditional love is to feel secure. So I will do my part to respect men and to help women to feel worthy and secure. And that's just a good start. You know, whether you just meet someone in the elevator for 30 seconds or they're your neighbor or you're in whatever group with them, if you get to go deep with someone, then great. But if it's just a moment where you're at a coffee shop and you can just take a few seconds to get to know someone and make them feel loved and give them your smile, you have no idea how that can change their world. I just got a message on Facebook from someone this week that she wrote me, and she said, Kelly, I don't know if you remember, but 12 years ago, we were at a resort in Naples, Florida. I was on my lounge chair and I was, you know, upset, and you noticed me and you came over and you sat on my lounge chair and you talked to me and you said these incredible words that were so wise and you prayed for me. And she said, I was in a massive crisis with my marriage at that moment. You had no idea. But I just want to let you know that 12 years later, my marriage is stronger than ever. I made the shifts that you said to make that day about what I was doing in my business. And she's like, you took, you know, 15 minutes to sit with me on my lounge chair and it changed my life. I had no idea. I mean, she just wrote me that from 12 years ago. I've not kept in touch with this woman. And I can tell you just quick too, at my dad's funeral, he passed 6 years ago, people came up to me and said, wow, if it wasn't for your dad, I never would have gotten to this business. Your dad knew that I was really having a hard time and he gave me a job. Your dad knew I was going down a bad path with drugs and he, you know, pulled me in, he got me help. And, you know, all these things, I'm like, wow, you know, when you're 12, 13, 15 years, you don't see that stuff in your parents. I mean, I knew they were generous and they were good people, but at his funeral, the people who came up and the difference that I saw he made and the compassion he had for people and how he was always looking to help the underdog. I was like, wow, he did. You know, I love my dad. I honored him, but it was incredible to see the difference that he made. And that's what I get up to do every day.
If you ever want to know what's truly important in life, go to a funeral. I mean, don't crash a funeral. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But next time you go to a funeral, in the midst of all the sadness and the sense of loss, listen to what people say about the person in the coffin or the urn. That's what's important in life. What do they remember? So when you said unconditional love, make this point, and then I just want to take you somewhere, if that's okay. I know that lands with people because that is so true. And we want to be seen and we want to be loved unconditionally. A lot of times that doesn't happen and that wounds us deeply and defenses go up. So people might be thinking, oh, yeah, but I've done that before and I'm not making that mistake again. Yeah, I'll love unconditionally, but not for him. Not for her, you know, maybe in my next marriage, marriage number two, once I'm done with this person, I can love unconditionally, or not Jill at the office. Definitely not her. I know what she's up to. And that's understandable. That lands with me. I feel for that perspective. I've been that person in moments of my life before, being extremely honest, but there's another frame on that. Because we talked about frames in one way, shape, or form a couple of times in this episode. And the frame is, you are what you love, not what loves you. You are who you love, not who loves you. Those things have so many variables that it puts it so far outside of your locus of control. It makes no sense to dwell on it for a second. But it's not, you know, like your dad, yeah, helping people. But what did that do for him? Because he must have had a sense of, I'm this person. And it might not have been his primary motivation, but you know when you're making a difference. You know when you're loving unconditionally. You know when you're meeting someone where they need to be met without imposing conditions upon them, and you feel that. I mean, there's whole brain centers dedicated to altruism. What you do for others has an inseparable, deep and dynamic impact on you.
It does. And that's the whole flow of giving and receiving. So if you're someone who gives and gives and gives and gives and gives and get, at some point you're going to be empty. But you also need to be a good receiver, and where you gave might not be the place that you receive. So for example, when I'm in New York or Dallas and there's homeless people, I will sit down on the ground with them and I will just sit there and tell me your story and get to know them and get them to dream again. And I'll go sit and have lunch with them. I'll give them money for hotel room, whatever. And I'll probably never see them again. They don't have cell phones. There's no way for me to stay connected to them. So I don't know how that's going to go. But then all of a sudden someone might take me out to dinner or, you know, give me their vacation home for the week or whatever. So I'm going to give where I feel led to give. One of the second year that I was doing the word of the year, my word was generous. And I wanted to be generous on every single occasion that I was led. Now, some places I'm not led to give, and other places I am. And I never want lack to keep me from giving generously. And sometimes it hurts. I mean, there's not an unlimited use of my resources, but I want to give just believing it's going to make a difference. It's going to help someone to feel loved. And in terms of the unconditional love, you can't get that from any one person on the planet. No one can fill all of your love tank mm-hmm. to be unconditionally loved. In fact, 10 people, 1,000 people can't fill that. And for me, again, it goes back to my faith. That's the only place where the love is perfect. And I need to be whole in that before I can get into a relationship and try and love another person where it's going to be messy. And you've got two people who are coming with all these things. And, you know, you mentioned my dad, he had an orphan spirit. He literally was an orphan. He grew up in orphanages and foster care. So maybe that was the pain in him yeah. that made him want to give opportunity to other people. So it wasn't like he was, you know, this great and mighty man. He came from a humble place where he knew what it was like to be unloved and unwanted and start with zero. So he wanted to give that, you know, underdog the encouragement and the leg up. So I think a lot does come out of our pain. And there's definitely a spiritual realm to this. And a lot of the women I work with, they have this spirit of unworthiness. And they just feel like, I'm not lovable, I'm not worthy of things. And they keep pressing things down. And it keeps them from being whole and healed and getting in this flow of giving and receiving. Because you can't outgive. No matter how much I give, I get back way more. And it's more than just a text message. It's more than just someone buying me dinner. I guess a year and a half ago started doing a gratitude journal where I am not going to go to bed until I fill a page with gratitude. And it started out really mechanical. It was like, took vitamins, check, walk the dog, check, like I'm thankful this. But then I started going throughout the day like, wow, oh my goodness, not everyone gets to talk to Bobby Cappuccio today. Like, oh my goodness, like this is, I'm so grateful for this conversation and who knows who's going to hear this. And that's amazing. And I just started going throughout my day looking for things to be grateful for. And it changed everything. And stuff started coming to me. That's just part of this universal flow of giving and getting back. And you don't give to get, but it's just the way it works. You can't mess that up.
That cycle's inseparable. You can't have one without the other, right? The receiving almost occurs spontaneously and immediately from the giving without receiving. Good luck. And there are certain belief systems that I've adopted throughout my life and career. They're just not true. And sometimes through reflection, I identify, oh, that's where that came from. Others, I have no clue what was going on in my head. But I used to share a lot of my story with audiences because I wanted to take something painful for me and use that to help and encourage or be a tool or a pathway for somebody else. And then I got into my head, who the hell are you to talk about your story? Nobody cares about you. Get to the information. And I remember years ago when I was living in Singapore, I was in front of a massive audience and the audience did not like me at all at the end of the day. I mean, not only did they not like me, they weren't neutral. They were like, he's offensive. He's offended us. I was like, what did I do? And I was reporting into a Singaporean brigadier general, one of the smartest guys I've ever met in my life, someone who I developed a ton of respect for. And he sat me down in this boardroom. It's like, you were so disconnected and showed no generosity. I was like, I'm sorry. Like, what happened again? And he said, well, you spent an entire day with us and you asked us to be open and vulnerable with each other. And you broke us up into groups. You never even had the respect to introduce yourself. It's like, what are you talking about? I introduced myself. I talked about, you know, who I was, why I was here. You know, Michelle introduced me. No. We don't care about your title. You never talked about who you were, what you went through, what you struggled through in life. Who are you? You never told us your story. You know, it's Singapore. They have enough information. That is a highly educated, education-driven society. They didn't need more data. They didn't need more empirical evidence. What they wanted was who's the person from the room. They wanted that story. I was like, oh, that landed. So you can't, that cycle is interdependent. So share with us, if you will, you talked about some of the work that you've been involved in, you know, post-divorce, and you talked about 8 steps that help people go through this a little bit more expeditiously. Like, because as we start to close, what are those 8 steps and where do we get information about you, tools and resources? Where can we find them?
Okay, well, great, thank you. So the 8 points that I came to after 3.5 years of deep, like full on, how do I heal? How do I get better? Number one was identity. And that's, you know, what we talked about, who I am and whose I am, and just really getting upright with that. And the second one is forgiveness, which, man, we could talk hours about forgiveness. I know people don't like to talk about it because they're like, Kelly, if you heard my story, you'd never be telling me to forgive. And again, not minimizing horrible things, but forgiveness is for you. That was the very last part of my healing. I wish it was first because it's so powerful. Renewing your mind, and that stop telling that story about the past because you're creating this groove in your brain that just floods back all these emotions. Yeah. And it's not even how you remember it. So I get them to renew their mind, get present.
Exactly.
The fourth thing is self-love and gratitude. They go together. So there's so much self-loathing that happens with divorce. Then we talk about purpose, divine health, abundant wealth. And then the last part is what I call joy, resurrection, and celebration. Like, how do we resurrect this new life, this bonus life, one that you could be so excited about? And so we get them to start dreaming again and taking those steps towards that vision.
I always joke about this because it comes from the film Vanilla Sky. Sophia Serrano, who was played by Penelope Cruz, she says this thing to Tom Cruise when they first meet and they're like falling in love over the course of an evening. And she says, every passing moment is a chance to turn it all around. And there's this redemption and resurrection theme throughout that entire film. And it could be a good thing. It could be an inspiring thing. It could be a highly painful moment, but all of that can be a chance to turn it all around. Thank you, Kelly. Right.
Yeah, no, I'm so happy to share. So KellyCalabrese.com is always a place to go. It's Kelly with an I. My page for the women going through divorce, separation. I mean, I have people 8 years post-divorce who are still in a dark place, who are kind of repeating the same relationship, you know, same guy with a different head, you know, kind of thing. Is intentionallyfabulous.com. And it's about being intentional about creating a fabulous bonus life. And I have a Facebook page that's free, private. We talk about the hard things. We encourage, we support, we laugh. And that's also intentionally fabulous for any women who want to go there.
Thank you again. It was, first of all, it was great seeing you again. And thanks for coming on and sharing with us.
I am so happy to do it. Thanks for bringing the show to the world. The world needs it.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Visit us at theselfhelpantidote.com to share your feedback, insights, and recommendations on what topics you'd like us to explore in the future.